Hey guys, welcome back to the Social Distance Podcast. It's been a few weeks. We're 3 or 4 weeks into the off season now, and we took a little breather from the podcast at the same time as we did from bike riding. But we're back. We recap what we've been up to lately. George runs us through his team meetings in UAE with his new team in Dubai, driving Formula race cars, doing all sorts of things with the Pogman. And we talk about previous off-season activities with some R-rated stories, I would say. So like, share, subscribe, follow us on social media, on Instagram, and jump on the YouTube channel and click on alerts and subscribe. Thank you very much for listening. We love you all.
I'm not prepared for this.
This is going to be a good one. I can sense it.
Let's get ready to rumble!
And we're fucking G.
Are we?
Oh,
I'm so excited.
Well, you can't impeach somebody that's doing a great job.
From Suchin, Tendulkar.
Bruce Gigolo.
George Bennett, you deserve this, big fella.
What's that solution?
He's put the finger straight through the one ply.
We try and create a comfortable environment. There's no bullshit.
There's just so many of them, aren't there, though? They just don't like it.
Nelson, be proud. Yeah, baby.
Yeah, baby.
I thought I could
finish my toast before the intro finished, but you've cut out a few lines, and now I've just caught me with a mouthful of avocado toast.
It's good to be avocado back, boys. It's been toast. A few weeks.
Mm.
Are you an avocado just straight up on toast, man?
Well, no, because I thought we were doing this 15 minutes later, and I had a whole smorgasbord of things planned, and then I've ended up with toast because you guys are haranguing me about being late to the podcast.
I like how George, we never know when we're going to get him on the show, and then when he does turn up, it's like a massive inconvenience. Even if you tell him days out, this is the time that we're recording, you know, there's always a drama, but it's good to have him back because the last show you're on, a couple of shows ago, George, I felt that you really lifted the show, mate. Like, I don't know if it's a new team or you just got a new lease on life. You don't feel
I'll tell you
angry.
What, I've lost that lease on life in a big way. That disappeared over the last 3 days. So the last
we didn't help ourselves by going to that health retreat that we've been publicising on our social media, did we?
Mm.
We've fooled the listeners as much as we can fool them. It wasn't a health retreat. It was not a health retreat.
So on that, you've done this post, and you two guys on the Social Distance Instagram and Twitter, you've tried to play the whole Gallagher brothers, and it's... You know, I liked it instantly, but then it lit up with people talking about George's finger and how long this middle finger is. Like, this is ET sort of areas. George, what the hell is going on, mate? That's not normal.
Mm. I bet there's a lot of people at home. You know, the whole big
take
hand.
That picture off.
big hands. Actually do have big hands, but that's only, like, that's it. That's where the bus stops.
So how was your health retreat, boys? Because you,
I was good.
You seem flat.
Mentally and physically, I'm far worse off. I think I only did one night of it too. I don't know how you managed with the rest of it, Bills. I came in, I was late. I got detained for an extra day in Abu Dhabi in UAE to hang out with some pretty cool people, actually. So that was pretty cool. But that meant I missed a block of it. And I also didn't get to participate in the gravel race. But did you get round?
We did a gravel race on Sunday, actually. It was good. I was just thinking before, it's like we're in the off season. We thought we were going to do heaps of podcasts because we had so much time on our hands, but the off season's almost over for us. Like we did a gravel race on Sunday. You were going to do it, but you had your team meetings in Dubai or United Arab Emirates. We basically closed the off out with the gravel race on Sunday, and now it's like it's coming up 4 weeks off the bike already. Closed it out with a couple of days at the health retreat. You join us for a day, and it's time to basically crack back into it, I reckon. I need to though. I desperately need to start. Exercise.
At what point do you reckon it's too far? You know, like, was there a moment that's offy? So you've had 4 weeks off now, and this gravel race was first ride back. So some people like to ride a bike. Generally, we don't really touch a bike.
at what point did you wake up this off season and go, fuck me, I'm never coming back from this?
Every morning, maybe.
Day three, you're too far gone.
Particularly this morning.
Do you have that morning when you have like a shower and you look in the mirror? Is that the hardest part when you have to confront yourself and go, where are you at, mate? When are you going to pull your head in?
Do you know what Bills does? He fishes for people to go. So he's like, we're sitting there and he's like, we're swimming because it's been insane weather here. It's been like midsummer. So environment's definitely gone to fuck, gone to the dogs. But Bills goes,
it's gone to fuck.
Edit that. We'll go back and edit that.
Dr. George Bennett's climate deception.
And he'll go, oh, I'm just so fat. And then he like looking that people will go, nah, mate, you're all right. It's no, you know, it's October, it's November, you're right. He doesn't get that from me. I had to climb with you today. I was like, yes, you're actually overweight, not even for like a cyclist, but for a normal person.
The other day, I was like sitting by the pool and I had my shirt off and I was like, fuck, I'm actually fat. And then George was like, and then like Durbo was there. He's like, yeah, bro. It's like this every year. I'm the same. Every October, we're like that. We always lock it down come November. And, you know, we're skinny again by January. George just looks at me and goes, you actually are. Like, you're actually fat.
Well, I actually reckon Bill's going to come back.
Do you think that's more a bloke thing? Like, we love just telling
people. Oh, no, that's his other move, blaming a bloke. Him and Durbo, they love blaming the bloke. Like, oh, it's just water, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, come on. Yeah,
but women don't communicate the same way, surely. Like, if another woman said, you know, Cheryl, I feel fat, she'd be like, no, you're not. Like, you're fine. Like, yeah, I don't think they're brutally honest.
If someone told me, mate, you're fat. You want it. You need to hear it as a pro cyclist. Yeah. Harsh criticism. I mean, it's good. I mean, if someone said also you're lazy, or you're not training, you know, you need to do more out. You know what I mean? It's like maybe this will help me get better. But I do agree. No, it is October.
But surely that's only inner sanctum type stuff. Like if that come from anyone that you don't know really well, it'd be straight away like that guy, nah, he's dead to me.
Yeah, absolutely. You have to know someone to a point where you can tell them they're fat. But I mean, look at Ulrich. He was, Jan Ulrich, he used to get huge. Actually, the best example of a guy who could oscillate was Carlos Betancourt.
Man. Yeah.
I remember seeing him in was it potentially
Paris-Nice. He won Paris-Nice when he was massive, even.
Yeah, but he was still quite big then. But no, he didn't actually win. He was gonna he did win. But he has done some turnarounds, that guy. I mean, the biggest turnaround he did was at the airport in Colombia, and when he was meant to get on the plane with the rich Colombians, he never got on. He never rode a bike again after that.
Wait, no one knows where he is. Like, so
I don't know the story.
Do you remember Carlos Betancourt?
No.
Jonesy?
The name rings a bell, but yeah, you fill us in.
He's a Colombian rider who rode for Age of Tour for a number of years. He won Paris-Nice, and then he moved to Movistar, and he's been at Movistar for a couple of years now. Probably like 4 or 5 years he's been at Movistar, and he's super good, talented. He's one
like massive talented. Like that's amazing. His potential is bigger than any. Like they say, he was the guy that was going to win everything. You know.
Yeah. Right. So the listeners will know Carlos Betancourt. Anyway, so he was with Movistar last year, and then when the pandemic hit, and then you know all the Colombians went home. They're all homebodies. The Colombians love going back to their family, so they all went home during the pandemic, during the pause in racing last year. And then, like, I think it was in July last year, the Colombian government basically chartered a flight from Bogota or one of the cities in Colombia for all the professional cyclists to get back to Europe so they could start racing. Because at this point in time, the borders were closed. There's no flights going in and out of Colombia. So they put the special charter flight on for all professional cyclists. They had Chavez was on there, Bernal was on there.
I think it was like 20 riders, man. It was so many guys.
Everyone was on there. But it was the only chance to get out of Colombia and come and race. Betancourt was contracted to Movistar. He's like, yeah, I'm coming. He booked his flight and everything. Movistar's bloody picking him up at the airport at the other end for whatever races he's doing. Just didn't turn up. didn't get on. Just didn't get on the plane. And honestly, he's just, no one knows. Now, I spoke to Chavez. I was like, where's Bettencourt, mate? No one's seen him, heard from
he's
him.
He's done.
But I heard
why don't I know about this story? This is unbelievable.
Yeah, but he's a bit of a legend. He's actually like in folklore in Colombia. Like, we met a guy the other day, and one of my new teammates, a really close friend of his, lives in Colombia, and he said that one night he was in a bar, and he's a cycling fan, and he's a Danish guy, and he's like, oh, I think there's Bettencourt. He went over and had a yarn with him and ended up having this like sat down. Bettencourt bought him some beers and it just turns out he's like the best guy. And he's just a super nice guy, but he rode to the bar on a horse. So he owns a stable of horses.
He owns the special horses in Colombia, like the rich and famous. I think it did start years and years and years ago with like the Escobar kind of crew of people. What made them, you know, like show their wealth was this type of horse. It's like a tap dancing horse.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's a special, you'll be able to find it online on YouTube. It's like these special Colombian style of horses that go like real fast feet.
What are they like? Real fast feet.
So Bettencourt owns heaps of them. That's like his
gig. Do you think he got to the point where he goes, you know what, I've got to a point in my life where it's either the bikes or the horses. Fuck it, I'm not getting on the flight. I'm done. I've got these rare horses. That's it.
Well, he was always real elusive. Like he's always been in and out of, like we were saying earlier, like in and out of form and condition. Like one minute he's winning Paris-Nice, next thing he can't, but he finished a stage and tour of Catalonia. He's in and out, but he's always been like quite elusive in that sense, I think. And I think the last year the pandemic came off, I guess go do my tap dancing horses.
Is there part of you that, you know, in sports we love going, oh, he never reached his full potential or whatever, but certain people that get to a point in their career where they go, you know what, I've probably got 3 or 4 good years left, but fuck it, I'm out. You've still got to have a part of your brain that goes, I respect that. That is the ultimate mic drop in sports. Because sports, the expectation is you have to ride till the end. Or do your career till the very end. But the people that just go, nah, fuck it, don't want it.
The best example of that, Jonesy, is one of our close friends, is Jesse Sargent. Man, he was... And the biggest thing for Jesse was he stopped with... He could have just written out his contract. He was on a good contract. He could have just written it out, taken the money, pissed around, not really ridden. And to him, he just went, actually, I actually don't want to be here. I want to be in New Zealand with my dogs. I want to ride mountain bikes and fuck it, I'm out. When he was young, he was like, what, 27, 26?
Oh, right, that.
Probably. Yeah, I rated him, man. Like it takes balls, eh? And that's like when you read like Andre Agassi, I'm sure you both read Andre Agassi's book, Open.
I didn't have to because the takeaway from that was he wore a wig. Whenever anyone talks about, he was wearing a rug. Yeah, when he won Wimbledon and he had the headband, it was a rug, and that was the biggest takeaway from that entire book. He was bald. It's like, no shit, he was bald.
Do you know what went from that book?
But how do you go from a full lush locks to clean shaven, like runway dude? He was wearing a rug, and what it takes him to write a book to people go, oh my god, like he was bald.
What I couldn't believe about that book is he was making himself out to be like, okay. Rules are different amongst different sports, but you know how he's like his back was cooked and he's like, yeah, you know, I was going off in between sets and getting like cortisone injection and you know, coming back out and playing on and like, you know, and people are like, oh, what a hero.
You imagine a
cyclist being like, bullshit. Oh, I had a sore knee, so I went off and just smashed some cortisone and came back and
doper like,
it is doping, it'd make you so much faster. It's like if you take, I mean, Not that we know, but I'm pretty sure if you take an injection of cortisone in your back as a tennis player, it's going to give you a lot of advantage.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's pain release. Like, same as Richie McCaw when he'd broken foot in the Rugby World Cup in 2011, whatever it was, and when they won in New Zealand. He's like,
so is that only illegal in endurance sports? Is it not across all sports?
Well, I think it's just cycling, isn't it? Like it's
that's what's bullshit.
Surely it must be other sports. Like, It must be other things. I mean, that's it's a pretty dodgy.
But you're dead right. It's but it is performance enhancing. And you had even in Aussie Rules footy here, like they'd go, oh, he's copped a corky. He'd be going up for a jab at half time and he'll be back. That's performance enhancing. Like,
I also think that's super dangerous, right? If you're like, if you're injured that bad that you need a
injection
to ride it off. I mean, don't they have a reserve?
Like, that's the main thing, eh? Is like, that's like so many things that people use in sports to continue. It's like, well, you shouldn't actually be continuing. Maybe you need to rest. I think you're injured, bro. I think you've got an injury. Like, maybe chuck a bag of peas, frozen peas on there and call it a day, I reckon. Eh?
Yeah. At what point do you call T and go, that's sport, you're cooked, off you go. It's bullshit.
Exactly.
But how are you traveling, George? Because for the listeners, you've obviously signed with UAE. You've had the first camp. It's the new day at school. How did you feel going over and meeting your teammates for the first time? Because let's be honest, people would know from following this podcast that when it comes to social interactions, you just thrive, mate. You love it, particularly when it's fresh.
Real people person.
You would just would have been going in there, going, "Hey guys, come from Jumbo. This great relationship." Pink
bladder in each hand.
Yeah. What's happening,
guys? Forget everything that's happened over the last 4 years.
Nah, it's all good. What's down? I'm up a chat. I love it. Love meeting new people. How'd you go?
One Slovenian to the next.
Yeah.
Actually, you nailed it on the head. New day of school. First day of new school. Man, it's pretty. Like, it's cool. And walked in there. Actually, didn't really know anybody except for Finn, or anybody well, you know. But knew a few people, you know, like combos in the Peloton, but never really like sat down and talked with too many of them, at least. And man, what a nice bunch of guys! I was very pleasant. I mean, I don't know what I expected. I didn't really expect anything, but like, it's always the way, you know. You have like a few arguments on the bike with somebody, and it's very easy to like, oh, that guy's an asshole, but they're not. Like, I mean, point in case, me. Wow, maybe a bad example. Maybe a bad example.
Did you feel that they're looking at you with the arsehole eyes? Like, oh, he's Bennett. And they're sort of sussing you out?
No, I actually felt really, maybe it's my, maybe I'm not a very perceptive person, but I felt like everyone was really, really nice. But maybe that all been briefed, like, guys, let's try not to rein it in a bit when he gets here. Right?
He's up on the rookie.
But that was actually super good. And you know, it was like, I think when we first got there, it was so hectic. You know, we got in at like 2 a.m. got up at 5. Oh, Europe time. We got up at 7 or whatever it was. It was just stupid first 2 days of going to the expos, photos. I don't even really know what we did, but we just did stuff. And you know, you got a lot of different sponsors from Abu Dhabi, Dubai, and we're around the place. And then eventually, towards the end of the camp, we got a bit of like few free days and like some team bonding activities, and man, we did some cool stuff. We did it. We drove a an F3000 car, and we got there. And they're like,
"Is that like Formula 3?"
I guess. I mean, it's a.
Yeah, I don't know what F3000 means.
I think it's Formula
3. It's like an upgrade on PlayStation 5 if you've got enough coins. That's what it sounds like.
But when you drove it, you actually drove it. You didn't.
Well, when I went there, I was like. They showed us, it was like a race car, you know, like a single seater. It looked like, you know, for anyone that didn't know anything about cars, it looked like an F1 car, which is a bit smaller.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, because I assumed that there was going to be a driver and we'd sit in this passenger seat or something. And I got them, so there's only one seat in this. And then I was like, oh, you know, are we watching someone drive it? I don't know. I don't know what's going on. And then they're like, okay,
that'll be fun.
And then they're like, oh, when you start the car, all right, and they're like, oh, we're actually driving this thing. Okay. All right. And then it's thinking like, surely it's going to be have like a governor on it. So you can go like, I don't know, 100-150 km an hour or something. It's just full biscuit, man. And I they had this little like instructional video and they gave you the keys and you're like, all right. And I was like, oh, okay.
Were you thinking now's my chance to impress my new teammates? I'm just going to let this one rip.
I actually, a little bit of me was like, this is a real, you know, there'll be one guy here that crashes this car, so don't let him hear you. And what you do is you go up behind the safety car, and then they sort of like, it's sort of like neutral of a race, you know, they do, you have to stay, behind them and they at a distance and they just increase the speed kind of thing, and they will only go as fast as, so if they see that you've got the hang of it, they go faster. So I got the hang of it pretty well, and then by the end I was just going as fast as I could go, and the lead car just gave me free rein. Unbelievable.
What are the G forces like in that stuff?
I don't know. I don't know what the numbers are, but I was like breaking too early. But man, you get pretty fast. I reckon you can go about 200 over 200 at least on these straights. So yeah, it was we did that. We did go-karts. We did, I rented some jet skis one day. Did all sorts of stuff.
But by the end of it, did you feel like you're part of the cool group, or you still think that you got work to do?
Well, I probably needed to perform on the bike. That's probably the missing piece. Be a good cyclist.
I was going to say that. It's like when you talk about the powerhouses of cycling, like if you look, obviously Sky or Ineos or Grenadiers or whatever they call themselves now, were the major powerhouse of the last decade in cycling. And then Jumbo came along. Well, they've been around for a long, long time, but they were shit ass. No offense to Jumbo, but they were shit ass.
Oh, no,
and then, yeah, and
we
then
over the races in our first year.
Yeah. Over the last like 5 or 6 years, I've built this wicked team and way of operating, and they've become a powerhouse of cycling. So now you'd argue that them and Sky are still probably two biggest powerhouses when it comes to grand tours. And then UAE's come along, not really a powerhouse. Pogacar is there. You know, so he's made their team go, okay, we need to build a powerhouse now because we've got the number one Tour de France rider in the world. We need to build a team around him. And then you look at the roster for next year. Like when you got back, we're at our health retreat, we're talking about your camp. I completely forgot, but the names you were throwing around, the guys that have gone there, obviously you've gone there, Marc Soler's gone there, Joao Almeida's gone there. It's going to actually be one hell of a grand tour team, mate.
The thing is, they can field, yeah, and they've got two young guys coming through as well, like some young Italian guys. They can field a pretty awesome eight riders. The thing that's still different, you look at like Jumbo, they can field like 16. Mm. You know what I mean? But give some of these young guys a few more years, and like, man, that's the thing with teams now, right? If you've got a good rider now, everybody, especially a guy who's won twice, you end up getting a situation where everyone's racing against them. Mm. So if he's in a situation without teammates and the guy that's third on GC is going up the road and someone needs to chase, they'll sacrifice their race just to flick. You know, other good riders, other good rivals will flick themselves just to flick the first guy, you know, to flick like Pogacar, you know. So what you actually need to do is the better you become and the more established you become, you need the more responsibility you have to take on and the stronger team you need. So you can almost get away with it on your first one, getting there with a team that's, you know, you're going under the radar, no one's really looking at you, no one's looking at your team, and you can benefit from other strong teams. But when you're the guy, when you're the big dog, you need a stronger team than anyone because everybody looks at you to do everything.
Yeah, well, case in point, last year when Pogacar won the Tour de France, he just sat on the back of you guys for three weeks. You know, like obviously he was right up there every single day and he won a couple of stages along the way. But Roglic took the jersey relatively early on, end of the first week, no, just before the rest day or something.
Stage four, we took it.
Nah, we had it then.
No, we took it on.
It was you before, wasn't it?
We had it.
Oh, but then you lost it because remember Yates, you took it in Nice.
Oh yeah, we lost it on the Mary Blanc. Yeah. We took it on the Mary Blanc.
Yeah, right. I think Yates, you lost it the day before the first rest day or something.
Mm.
And then anyway, you guys did the brunt of the work from day one because you were the favourites, and Roglic was always the favourite. Like
even when you guys had the jersey, we were riding.
Yeah, oh sweet. I think I did about 10k in the front there the whole tour. We had the yellow jersey for 5 days. anyway, but then, like you say, then Pogacar won in the last TT there. Then this year came around, he was one of the favourites, or the favourite. But then same thing kind of happened again in a completely different way. Like Roglic crashed out. So many of the favourites crashed out in that first week that Pogacar was, although his team was strong, he didn't have to have the world's strongest team because the riders that they were needing to control, they actually did really well, but the riders that they were needing to control weren't the Roglic's, weren't the Geraint Thomases, weren't the Bernals, you know. But now, next year, it's like you say, like put all those guys back in the same start line again. Like, you can't, if you want to win the Tour de France, you're still competing against Roglic, who's a bloody unreal Grand Tour rider with an unbelievable team. And he needs you to go stack it up. But do you reckon they'll, I guess you don't really know yet, but like I was thinking, UAE actually has a team now like Jumbo where you could go with a leader to the Giro, a leader to the Tour, and a leader to the Vuelta and podium or win. Those,
I think there'll be a bit of that. There'll be a bit of that, but I think, I mean, you know, when you've got the best Grand Tour rider in the world, you've also got to back them, right? So
yeah.
I think there'll be some guys that double up with like a secondary goal is try and win it up another one or try and be on the podium of another one. But I reckon we'll be pretty much all eggs in his basket.
Well, I guess you go like, you go to the Giro and ride GC at the Giro, like, you know, another one of the co-leaders or second string leaders, and then you go to the Tour as a worker.
I reckon I won't be at the Giro, considering last year I nearly died of hypothermia on 6 of the 20 stages. I reckon I'll need to be about 6 kilos heavier before I ever go back to the Giro.
Well, that's why you went to the health retreat, just to work on how to get it
back
right.
Circling back to our question, is how far is too far gone?
Yeah, well, we also had this conversation, and it's actually quite an interesting topic. As stupid as it sounds, we had this chat, George, at the health retreat about how athletes live in such extremes. You know, you're either like, especially cyclists, you're either super, super skinny and fit and bloody veins popping out of you everywhere in your body, or you're like, or you're like heading down the path that I'm staring down now. You know,
fat.
We're like, I hate it when you put this big screen on because I see my face. It's like horrible. Anyway,
yeah, but what intrigues me, you guys are like, I necessary. Know you're professional athletes, but you're not fat. Like,
no, we're not.
Yeah, compared to a professional athlete, your level of fat is like veins. It's the vein. If you see veins,
the problem is
if you don't see veins,
you're
fat.
You got to get back to this 5% body fat, and then you go and like, when you're at 12% and you're going, that's still 12%. That's probably still better than average, or way better than average.
Mate, I reckon average is 35, 40, easy.
Mate, like how we are now after 4 weeks off the bike is, in the general scheme of a human being, we're way more healthy now. Because
I'm not very healthy because I've got a permanent head cold this off season because you launch and you never give yourself a chance to recover. So I've just got like this low grade like shit feeling, like like, you know what I mean? You just feel shit. Like you're eating bad. Like for breakfast this morning, I had a chucho, which is like a
custard square.
I'd say like a
custard donut.
Custard donut. You know, like why? Just eat something normal. Eat a bowl of muesli. Would have been.
But didn't you have an Avo on toast? That would have made you feel better.
What time is it now?
Yeah, got the times wrong. Yeah, the whole thing with the off season is what I don't understand is like you can either go full extreme and just cook yourself and be fit the whole way through, but how much is it the mental health reset? Because I was a professional athlete, you need to switch off. If you don't, you're not going to have results the next year. It's a fact.
Well, this is exactly I think we broached this theory a few years, maybe last year, end of last year, because the mental health thing, right? I would say arguably your mental health by the end of 4 weeks off the bike isn't even that good. But what it's all about is reaching this point, right? So it's like, remember that theory I talked to you about how you got to create enough demons in the off-season?
Demons, I reckon it was 12 months to the day when you're talking about
I still stand by this. So what I do is I get to the point where I go, oh my God, I'm a piece of shit. I hate, like, you know what I mean? I just hate myself. I hate feeling like this bad. Mental health is not even good. Because you just, you know, you're not living a healthy lifestyle or a sustainable lifestyle. And you get to the point where you hate it so much that you go, right, time to rein this in. And then it feels so good to just get on the bike, come home, watch, you know, put your feet up, have a nice home-cooked dinner with your girlfriend. You know what I mean? And you just feel, you just love that. Whereas all that stuff in the season where, okay, and by August it wears thin and you're going, oh, I just want to step out and smash some burgers and some beers and all that stuff. But you build up enough of a buffer against it where you sort of learn to hate the lifestyle that you're so excited to go the other way and get back on the straight and narrow. But yeah, I did. I mean, the mental health, it is, and in a way it is mental health, but it's more like mental buffering.
It's a massive reset that, like, at least it points you to a level like marginally below zero, and that's enough of a motivation to at least get back to zero. And like we operate like well above zero for 9 months of the year, this high octane, like bloody be fit, be healthy, be skinny, be, you know, all that stuff. So we need those few months to at least just go back to zero and just go like you say and go, all right, I'm over this now. I want to get fit and I want to get healthy again. And that's what you need to do another 9 months of what we do.
It's like a kettle. Like, you're going to boil it and eventually you've just got to let the steam out and then reset and go again. Because if you don't, the whole thing's just going to blow up.
Yeah.
Like, I hear of riders, right? I'm not going to name names, but riders that will just try and maintain a level for the whole year. And then their results over years, it just declines because it's like, dude, you need 2 weeks. Get on Uber Eats, get on the piss, just reset your brain, just have a release. Because if you don't release, what's the point? I don't get it.
Some would argue that we release too far, but I disagree. I think you can do, there's no amount of damage you can do to yourself in a month off that you can't undo. If you get back on the bike on November, 1st November, that you can't be ready to go by end of
February. Best example I heard of that was the Ween Dog, Peter Weaning. Former bike rider at Green Edge and rode for a heap of teams. But I remember going to Curacao with him and, mate, you try and sit on Ween Dog's wheel in off-season on the beers, you're going to end up in a body bag. And I remember looking at him going, far out, like, talk about getting fat. Like, Ween Dog was getting, like, just a 1 millimeter love roll over his shorts. I'm going, ooh, dog, you know, you're putting a few on here. And he would say, mate, 1 month, I don't touch the pedals. I drink as many beers as I can. I eat whatever I want because I know that I'm a mad dog. And when I start training, I train harder than any of these bastards. You know, I go hard. And I know that that's my process. So he enjoys that month because that's when it's worth it. When you can just let the tire out and go bang.
Yeah, I agree. And I heard a good story once about Oscar Ferreira, who won world champion and everything. And I think 1 year they were changing bikes. This was back with Rabobank, and they were changing bike sponsor or something like this. And they sent him a bike to his home in October, November, whatever. And then they go to the January camp, and he brings the bike with him. And the mechanic's like, oh, Oscar, how was the bike? Did you like it? And he's like, oh, I don't know. I haven't got it out of the bag yet. All summer, all winter, he just ski, run, whatever. But he was just such a freak. I remember this prologue. They told me that he won this prologue once, and like he was about to start, and everyone's like, "Oscar, you're about to start. Like, your start time soon." And he's like, "Oh yeah,
cool."
Slips up his skin suit, does 3 squats, walks off the bus, wins the prologue.
They reckon he was so chilled. Heyman was telling me the story once because Heyman was on Rabobank with him, and apparently they were like coming into the finish one day and like. I don't know how you don't know, but anyway, the bunch was lining out and they were quite far back. And Oscar Ferreira said to Heyman, like, oh, Matty, I feel good now. Move me up. I reckon I can win the sprint today. And Heyman's like, we just went under the 1K kite, mate. We're 100 wheels back. He's like, oh, okay, I don't sprint today.
That's awesome.
I've heard many stories like this.
What a legend.
When he would ask like how many laps to go, and they'd be like, "There's no laps," and he'd be like, oh.
But he was 3-time world champion.
I know. The best thing is him when he posted when he thought he won San Remo though, and he did this huge salute.
Oh yeah,
was it Balan or
Pataki? Was it Pataki?
Pataki came under him, did the bike throw, and he posted early. But
mate, apparently he went to Flanders 1 year, forgot his shoes. Didn't start because he forgot his shoes. Like, apparently he was just all over the show, mate.
I love this bloke. What a legend.
One of the best teammates I also had was another guy from Rabobank, but he came in and he shows up on the bus one day with this thing about shoes. And I saw him, he was sitting at the back of the bus and I was like watching him. And he was going like this, like with his hands out in front of him with 2 shoes, looking at them, and he kept looking at them, staring at them. And he looked real confused, and I was like, "You all right, mate?" He's like, "Yeah, yeah, yeah, yeah." I was like, "What?" And he showed me his shoes. He brought two left shoes with him. Oh man!
Hey, on the I was going to say on the UAE camp, because you have the biggest superstar in world cycling on your team, and then you read these media reports that are saying from Italian newspapers, oh, you know, Ineos have offered him 18 mil a year, and he's knocked it back and whatever. If that was me, I'd have to have a strut around me that's like, okay, my shit don't stink. And I'd expect that riders around me would be banging the table at every joke I said. You know, you've just got this aura of ass kisses around you because it's like, that's our man. But it's different in cycling, yeah?
Well, yeah, I think so because you can't – I mean, I don't think I know any genuinely arrogant pricks in cycling because how many times you lose? Every time you get on the bike, I mean, you might win a couple of times, but, like, you do 100 race days a year. You lose 85 of them if you're a really good rider. And if you're me, you lose, you know, 98 of them. So,
but still, surely you look at the guy and you go, that's the guy. Like, that's Pogacar. He's a fucking superstar. Or do you still just go, no, he's just a normal bloke?
He is just a normal bloke. He's just like this super calm kid that just loves riding a bike. If you know, it's like the whole thing, like if you met someone on a plane, I always think of like, okay, in Europe, you don't talk to the people beside you, but in New Zealand, when you're on an airplane, you always, well, I do. I talk to the person beside me. When I'm flying from Auckland to Nelson, it's always someone, well, what do you do? And you talk to them.
Yeah.
And like, you could genuinely get to the end of that conversation and be like, and at the end, you could slip in your ones, Tour de France twice and be like, oh, that's pretty normal. You know, you wouldn't know.
Did I tell this story about when I went to a mate's wedding in Hawaii and I had to fly from New York to Hawaii and I'd been out in the piss all night with a mate and I got to the airport and I'm hung as and I'm like, oh man, I'm in economy 14 hours. Oh, this is going to be fucking nightmare. Go to check in and then they do American Airlines like, do you want to upgrade for $800? I'm like, $800, 14 hours, business class. Let's do it. I get on the flight. And I'm sitting there, and I look across, and there's two guys with, like, you know, skater hats, and they look pretty chilled. But then people are going up to him going, oh, you know, not meant to do this, but can I get your autograph? And he's like, yeah, no worries, just sign it. I'm still pissed, so I didn't give a shit. And I turn to him, and I go, hey, boys, you famous or what? And then they go, yeah, sort of. Hey, what do you do? You skateboarders or what's happening? Yeah, nah, we're musicians. I go, oh, cool. What's your band name? What are you doing? Yeah, we're the Jonas Brothers. It's two of the Jonas Brothers. No shit. You're
the Jonas Brothers.
No shit. And as soon as they said that, I didn't know their music, but I knew of them because one of them went out with Delta Goodrum. And then I suddenly felt like the biggest dickhead. And I backed down. I was like, oh, mate, really. I apologize. I feel embarrassed now. And then they were fine. They're like, you know, oh, where are you going? I'm going to mate's wedding and gave him this whole rant because I'm still pissed about, you know, he's getting married on AFL Grand Final day. It's like Super Bowl. And, you know, when you get into a story, but you can hear the guy or you can see in his eyes, like, just wrap it up, mate. Just wrap it up, mate. Like, this is going nowhere. And then I said, all right, I'll leave you alone for the rest of the flight. But then when I landed, I was like, oh, man, I'm going to look like the coolest dude at the wedding. If I can get them to do a video message like, hey, Les, hey, Ashley, you know, all the best for your wedding. So I recorded that, put that on Facebook, got to the wedding, and I said, oh, did you see the Facebook message? Oh, yeah, no, it's pretty cool. That was it. So fucking Jonas Brothers. I thought I was like, going to be the man. And they go, yeah, no, that's pretty cool. Yeah, no, sweet.
How many Jonas Brothers were there? I think there's three of them.
There was two.
I think there was three. Did you not tell them you were in a band as well? You were the lead singer of WBE?
Yeah, worst band ever. Me, Durbo, and Mitch Docker.
Jonesy made an off-season band once called WBE, worst band ever. He got like, speaking of merchandise, actually, he made merchandise for this worst band ever, but he still hasn't made it for the fucking Social Distance podcast. Anyway.
It's coming.
In the off-season one year, you guys performed at the Irish pub in Girona, didn't you?
Yeah,
Simon got the guitar out.
Mate, we played at Gero's wedding, Andy Gerrans' wedding. That was one of the greatest fucking moments where We had the acoustic guitar.
I can pick your set list for sure.
Yeah.
You'd be a you'd be a Wonderwall wounder for sure.
100%. Mr. Big.
Mr. Big.
I know who also you would have gone. You would have
Ronan, Keaty.
Yeah. Mm. And you would have gone Iglesias, Ricky.
No. Living on a Prayer. Tommy is the work on the Ducks. And then
What about when you have to go?
No. You search for someone in the crowd. Because everyone knows the lyrics.
You stitch them up and you
So I go, yes, Rana Gerrans, give her the mic. It's like, you flag him in, you go,
here you go,
come on.
Because there's a key change halfway through.
Oh, it's bad.
Then it steps up.
Step away. John Bon Jovi doesn't even do it anymore. Like, if he plays that song live, when it has to get to the, wow, he just puts the mic out to the crowd and looks like he's doing a crowd thing, but it's like, no. I can't hit those.
Didn't Kanye do that when he tried to do the cover of Freddie Mercury of Queen Bohemian Rhapsody? And when he starts to belt out, he just passes the mic to the crowd.
But the karaoke killer is Take On Me. Aha, that's the worst one. Because it starts slow, and then when you get to forget it.
What I was doing last night was I've been trying to teach my girlfriend harmonies, you know, how to on the guitar, like how to sing a third and a sixth, and then you know what I mean. Just domestic fights. So
this is boredom to level 2.0. When you're sitting on a couch and your brain's ticking, going, I know harmonies. Let's go. Let's test it.
I was trying to pick like real easy songs to do a harmony to, and it turns out it's so hard to like actually get a harmony because automatically you just go to where the other person is. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then you go up, and then they would just follow you. Okay, well.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Do you know what I did last night? I bought a new microphone.
You cleared your throat?
What?
And a strep
sore? I bought a new microphone because this one's not doing what I wanted to do anymore. So I bought a new microphone and I bought a light, like a podcast light. So when that comes, I'll put it there in front of me and it'll.
I thought you were buying a MacBook Pro because when I spoke to you, you were like, mate, my microphone's screwed. The cable's busted. And I said, why don't you just buy a new cable? And then you're like, And then you morphed into, no, I need to upgrade the laptop. I'll get an iMac. Where did that end up?
Yeah, I'm going to buy an iMac. This laptop's it's so old, and like every time I watch
you look fatter in the camera. You need to upgrade to high def.
Every time I watch the show on YouTube on our YouTube channel, the Social Distance Podcast that I've subscribed to for updates and alerts, I go on there and I look at it and I go, my camera's so shit compared to your guys. So I've realized my laptop.
It's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing. I would actually, let's just swap computers. I'll go for the low grade mic, hide in the shadows. Low grade camera.
Hey, George, one other cool thing you did on your trip, didn't you go to the World Expo? Because I remember the World Expo in 1988 was massive in Australia. It was in like Brisbane. And our family, we had tickets to go, but my parents ended up starting their own business, so I had to sell the tickets. As a 7-year-old kid, we were gutted because that was like the biggest event.
You know what you were going for? Like what? Like I think it was exactly that. So I went to the World Expo, didn't even know what it was, and like so this was a big thing years ago. So we went there and we were like signing. It was when we announced the a new sponsorship deal with the team, and we had like a couple of hours, and we're like, well, let's just go. What is the World Expo? And everyone talked about how big it was. So we stepped out, and you would not believe like the investment in this thing. So I went, shit, this is a real big thing. So they just made this huge buildings everywhere, like hundreds and hundreds of buildings. So every country had their own like a house. And you go in there, and we went and hunted out New Zealand, and we hunted out Slovenia. And like New Zealand,
what was New Zealand like?
It was good, you know, like what you'd expect, you know, like a bit of like Maldi culture stuff, you know. Bit of number 8 wire, sheep, caves, nature, just your real run of the mill like New Zealand, and kind of like this dark kind of intriguing thing. And it was like, oh, well, that was pretty, you know, New Zealand respect.
We've got the best hotel quality.
Quality. We went to the Slovenia one after, and we were like. So straight away, Slovenia were just pumping up their own tires in a big way. They were like, we've got the best water. Like, they love water. Like, they're just all about, oh, but our water's so good. So they're just like, we've got best water, we've got the best this. And then they're like, and we're sitting there like pocket and stuff. He's like, we've got the world's best athletes. And then this huge picture of Roglic just pops up. <Everyone's> like,
that's awkward. That's a stitch up. They would have known Pogacar was going to be there. The camp's there. They knew it. That's a stitch. I'd be, if I was Pogacar, I would want answers. I want someone to be fired over that.
Oh, yeah, someone was. He just went like this. And then someone came in.
It's because the Slovenians still go look at Pogacar and go, yeah, we invested years and years into Roglic, who was going to be the first Slovenian to win the Tour de France. And finally his year came and he was winning it and everything was going to plan. And they're like, yep, just like we said 5 years ago when we started backing our horse, Roglic. Every single Slovenian in the country did that. And then on the last day, this other little young dude from Slovenia came along and took the jersey and won the Tour. And they're like, hang on.
Hold on.
It's not your turn yet, mate. It's not your turn.
Hey, I was thinking the other day, because it's off season, that we, you know how we haven't even talked, normally we do some kind of topical cycling chat, but there's been no bike races, and we thought there's been no bike races, but there has been a bike race. The World Track Champs was on, and
oh yeah,
the highlight of that for me was Shane Archibald, who previous guest on this podcast,
oh mate,
professional rider legend for Quickstep, was a team manager for Team New Zealand.
How that was?
Did you see that, Jonesy?
I saw you post a photo about the mullet, but his head was cut off. I just saw hair. I thought, well, that could be anyone.
That was actually Shane. He was whispering sweet nothings. He was whispering sweet nothings into Gady's ear. Was it pre points race? Scratch race.
Something like that. Yeah. So New Zealand had four riders there. They had two girls and two guys, and they didn't do a team pursuit or anything. They just raced a bunch of events, Omnia, Madison, points race, and obviously because of the COVID restrictions, all the Kiwis went home after the Olympics to their quarantine. They're back in New Zealand. They couldn't come over to Europe for the Worlds. The World Track Champs were in France last week. And so that obviously meant that they couldn't have any staff. The typical staff from New Zealand that would go over and manage them or be mechanics or soigneurs and stuff, they couldn't go. So they were like, we need at least a manager.
We are desperate.
To go and get the numbers. And Nobby.
How far down the list do you think Shane Archibald was? You know, they don't like that. Like anybody.
And yeah. I reckon he would have like... I would have called it lunchtime. He'd be in bed. Hello. Nobby. Who's this? Oh, it's the New Zealand Cycling Federation. Fuck do you want? Mate, we need your help. Oh, shit. When do you need me? Right. Okay. No, that guy can't plug in fucking headphones. How's he meant to manage anything?
He put his hand up and he did a good job. And then so the track champ started on, I think they started like on Wednesday last week. And on Wednesday night last week, I was sitting at a pub with Shane having a beer, watching the team pursuits. And I was like, aren't you supposed to be there? He's like, oh yeah, I'm going. He's like, I'm going tomorrow night. He's like, I'm going tomorrow night. And he's like, good, he's like going as a manager, and Aaron Gate went to the manager's meeting the day before because Shane didn't want to go up till Thursday.
What a legend.
He's the man. He's the man. But he had a good campaign. His first campaign, Gatey won the silver in the Omnium, and he was out there being the handler.
That's why you said he gave him a lucky stroke of the mullet, and that was what got him the medal.
Yeah, so he's had a successful managerial career. The flying mullet.
We'll have to get him on.
Recap. We should get him on for a recap of that. Jonesy, one thing that popped up before we go. One thing that popped up on my memories. Do you guys get memories?
Yes. I hate them. They're pretty, okay, anyone that gets memories in 2020 or 2021 hates them because it shows you a time when it was way better.
You'll hate this one. You'll hate this one in a big way.
Yes.
Do you remember, this sort of ties in with our off-season chat about you know, what we do in the off-seasons and play up and all this stuff. We rented that house in Barcelona.
Oh, yeah.
2015, so 6 years ago.
Yep.
And it got me thinking that maybe you could recap that story.
So what we used to do is in 2014, I was at the Giro with Michael Hepburn, and we decided to rent out a monster pad and just get all the Girona crew there. Had a great time. But it was a little bit sus, and George has just done the mic drop as he goes, tell the story as I leave. And it was an awesome pad, but it was cheap. And it was one of those ones where it was like, okay, this place is worth $3 million, but why is he giving us one night free and super cheap? And then we looked at the rooms and there was like cameras there. We knew they were cameras, but surely you're going, no, surely not. They're not cameras. And then we went back again in that same year because we had such a great time. They had like a nightclub in there and it was awesome. And then I remember we had a couple of Aussie guys that come and stayed at the Barca pad, and we used to do themes, you know, Christmas dinners and all this sort of stuff. And one guy went back to Australia, and 2 days later, you know, innocent, he was just on his computer and a screen popped up and happened to be RedTube. And
happened to be a short film.
He was doing business work. Yeah, he was doing business work, and this random site that he'd never seen before popped up, and it was RedTube. And it just so happened that the clip that popped up on that site was a scene that was two loving people sharing their love together on this couch that we stayed at.
The giveaway was the giveaway was the it was sculpture, magic. Right?
It was the giveaway sculpture. Was the big egg.
It was a big egg that was unmissable. And we always looked at that egg and went, that's a pretty ugly sculpture, but all right. So in this short film, this guy was watching who had been at the house, the egg was very present.
And so I slept on that couch, and it was categorically the same couch. And this loving couple didn't lay anything down. So I was like, well, that's a bit rough. I slept on that. So I had a mixed emotions. So I messaged this guy to say politely, hey, I know you rent this out to Airbnb, the Spanish guy, to say, hey, I don't know if you know, but this is what's going on at your pad, and send him a link to the clip. And his reply, I expect him to go, oh, I'm horrified. I'm so sorry, you know, blah, blah, blah. He replied, yes, I know. And you slept on that couch. Ja, 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 ja. In that moment, I don't know what I felt. I just felt absolutely violated that I'd slept on that couch. There'd been numerous scenes of this loving couple sharing their love. And I slept on that. And he didn't care. He owned it.
But the worst thing about that whole story is that he knew you slept on the couch, which shows that they were cameras and they were cameras. Active.
And the most offensive part of this story for the listeners is not that that happened. It's that we went back a year later and stayed at the joint. That didn't faze us. It was so cheap. And this time he threw in two free nights because we said in that video. But what we did is we thought, oh, we're one step ahead of this guy. We'll put aluminium foil over the cameras. That was the last time we stayed there. He still messages me, sent me photos of his kids. We're great mates. We got over it. But it was still an interesting time in my life, George. And I'm glad that it popped up on your face.
That popped up. That popped up as a memory.
You can't script that.
Did this memory pop on Facebook or on you, Richard?
Richard.
Oh, jeez.
Video 2015.
Off season.
Like, share, subscribe, guys.
Thanks for tuning in. Stay soon.
See you later.